would be his fault, and he might be trying, but he's still failing.
Silence. It's right to remove the wounded limb, Kaladin whispered. This is what we have to do. To stay alive. Where did those words come from? Gotta do what you can to stay alive, son. Turn a liability into an advantage whenever you can. Tien's death. That moment. That horrible moment when he watched, unable to do anything, as his brother died. Tien's own squad leader had sacrificed the untrained to gain a moment's advantage. That squad leader had spoken to Kaladin after it was all over. Gotta do what you can to stay alive. It made a twisted, horrible kind of sense. It hadn't been Tien's fault. Tien had tried. He'd still failed, so they'd killed him. Kaladin fell to his knees in the water.
Almighty. Oh, Almighty.
The king. The king was Dalinar's Tien.
Attack? Adolin asked. Are you certain that is what my father said?
The young woman who had run the message nodded a rain-slicked head, looking miserable in her slitted dress and runner's sash.
You're to stop that singing if you can, Bright Lord. Your father indicated it was important.
Adolin looked over his battalions, which held the southern flank. Just beyond them, on one of the three plateaus that surrounded their army, the Parshendi sang a horrible song. Sureblood danced, snorting.
I don't like it either, Adolin said softly, patting the horse on the neck.
That song put him on edge. And those threads of red light on their arms, in their hands. What were those?
Peril, he said to one of his field commanders. Tell the men to get ready for the mark. We're going to charge across those bridges onto the southern plateau. Heavy infantry first, short spears behind, long spears at the ready in case we're overrun. I want the men ready to form blocks on the other side until we're sure where the Parshendi lines will fall.
Storms, I wish we had archers.
Go!
The word spread, and Adolin nudged Sureblood up beside one of the bridges, which had already been set. His bridgeman guards for the day followed, a pair named Scar and Drey.
You two going to sit out? Adolin asked the bridgeman, his eyes forward. Your captain doesn't like you going into battle against Parshendi.
To damnation with that, Drey said. We'll fight, sir. Those aren't Parshendi anyway. Not any more.
Good answer. They'll advance once we start our assault. We need to hold the bridgehead for the rest of our army. Try to keep up with me if you can.
He glanced over his shoulder, waiting. Watching until... A large blue gemstone rose into the air, hoisted high on a distant pole near the command tent.
Go!
Adolin kicked Sureblood into motion, thundering across the bridge and splashing through a pool on the other side. Rainspren wavered. His two bridgemen followed at a run. Behind them the heavy infantry in thick armor with hammers and axes, perfect for splitting Parshendi carapace, surged into motion. The bulk of the Parshendi continued their chanting. A smaller group broke off, perhaps 2,000 in number, and moved to intercept Adolin. He growled, leaning low, shardblade appearing in his hand. If they... A flash of light. The world lurched and Adolin found himself skidding on the ground, his shardplate grinding against stones. The armor absorbed the blow of the fall but could do nothing for Adolin's own shock. The world spun and a spray of water spurted in through the slits in his helm, washing over his face. As he came to rest, he heaved himself backward up to his feet. He stumbled, clanking, thrashing about in case any Parshendi had gotten close. He blinked away water inside his helm, then oriented himself on a change in the landscape in front of him. White amid the brown and gray. What was that? He finally blinked his eyes clear enough to get a good look. The whiteness was a horse, fallen to the ground. Adolin screamed something raw, a sound that echoed in his helm. He ignored the shouts of soldiers, the sound of rain, the sudden and unnatural crack behind him. He ran to the body on the ground. Sureblood.
No, no, no,
Adolin said, skidding to his knees beside the horse. The animal bore a strange, branching burn all the way down the side of his white coat. Wide. Jagged. Sureblood's dark eyes, open to the rain, did not blink. Adolin raised his hands, suddenly hesitant to touch the animal. A youth on an unfamiliar field. Sureblood wasn't moving. More nervous that day than during the duel that won his blade. Shouts. Another crack in the air, sharp, immediate. They picked their rider, son. We fixate on shards, but any man, courageous or coward, can bond a blade. Not so here, on this ground. Only the worthy win here. Move. Grieve later. Move! Adolin roared, leaping to his feet and charging past the two bridgemen who nervously stood guard over him with spears. He started the process of summoning his blade and ran toward the fighting up ahead. Only moments had passed, but already the Alethi lines were collapsing. Some infantry advanced in clusters while others had hunkered down, stunned and confused. Another flash, accompanied by a cracking of the air. Lightning. Red lightning. It appeared in flashes from groups of Parshendi, then was gone in the blink of an eye. It left a bright afterimage, glowing, forked, that briefly obscured Adolin's sight. Ahead of him, men dropped, fried, in their armor. Adolin shouted as he charged, bellowing for the men to hold their lines. More cracks sounded, but the strikes didn't seem well aimed. They'd sometimes flash backward or would follow strange paths, rarely going straight toward the Alethi. As he ran, he saw a blast come from a pair of Parshendi, but it arced immediately down into the ground. The Parshendi stared downward, befuddled. It was as if the lightning worked, well, like lightning from the sky, not following any sort of predictable path.
"Charge them, you Kremlings!" Adolin shouted, running through the middle of the soldiers. "Back into your lines! It's just like advancing on archers! Keep your heads! Tighten up! If we break, we're dead!"
He wasn't certain how much of that they heard, but the image of him yelling, crashing into the line of Parshendi, did something. Shouts rose from officers, lines reformed. Lightning flashed right at Adolin. The sound was incredible. And the light! He stood in place, blinded. When it faded, he found himself completely unharmed. He looked down at the armor, which was vibrating softly. A hum that rattled his skin in a strangely comforting way. Nearby, another crack of lightning left a small group of Parshendi, but it didn't blind him. His helm, which, as always, was partially translucent from the inside, darkened in a jagged streak, perfectly overlaying the lightning. Adolin grinned with clenched teeth, feeling a savage satisfaction as he pushed into the Parshendi and swung his shard blade through their necks. By the old stories, the suit he wore had been created to fight these very monsters. Though these Parshendi soldiers were sleeker and more ferocious-looking than the ones he'd previously fought, their eyes burned just as easily. Then they dropped dead and something wiggled out of their chests. Small red spren, like tiny lightning, that zipped into the air and vanished.
"They can be killed," one of the soldiers yelled nearby. "They can die!"
Others raised the call, passing it down the lines. Obvious though the revelation seemed, it bolstered his troops, and they surged forward. They can die.
Shallan drew, frantic, a map in ink, each line precise. The large sheet, crafted at her order, covered a wide board on the floor. It was the largest drawing she'd ever done. She'd filled it in section by section as they traveled. She listened with half an ear to the other scholars in the tent. They were a distraction, but an important one. Another line rippled on the sides, forming a thin plateau. It was a copy of the one she'd drawn in seven other places on the map. The planes were a fourfold radial pattern, mirrored down the center of each quadrant, and so anything she drew in one quadrant she could repeat in the others, mirrored as appropriate. The eastern side was worn down, yes, so her map wouldn't be accurate in that area, but for cohesion, she needed to finish those parts, so she could see the whole pattern. "Scout reporting in," a messenger woman said, bursting into the tent, letting in a gust of the wet wind. This unexpected wind, it almost felt like the wind before a high storm. "What is the report?" Inadara asked. The severe woman was supposed to be a great scholar. She reminded Shallan of her father's ardents. In the corner of the room, Prince Renarin stood in his shard plate, arms folded. He had orders to protect them all, should the Parshendi try to break onto the command plateau. "The large center plateau is just as the Parshman told us," the scout said, breathless. "It's only one plateau over, to the east." Lin was a solid-looking woman with long black hair and keen eyes. "It's obviously inhabited, though there doesn't seem to be anyone there right now." "And the plateaus surrounding it?" Inadara asked. "Shim and Felt are scouting those," Lin said. "Felt should be back soon. I can do a rough drawing of what I saw of the center plateau for you."
"Do it," Inadara said. "We need to find that oath gate."
Shallan wiped a stray drop of water, fallen from Lin's coat, off her map, then continued drawing. The army's path from the war camps inward had allowed her to extrapolate and draw 8 chains of plateaus, 2 each, mirrored, starting from the 4 sides of the plains and working inward. She had almost completed the last of the 8 arms reaching toward the center. This close, earlier scout reports and what Shallan had seen herself, allowed her to fill in everything around the center. Relaine's explanations had helped, but he hadn't been able to draw out the center plateaus for her. He'd never paid attention to their shapes, and Shallan needed precision. Fortunately, earlier reports had almost been enough. She didn't need much more. She was almost done.
"What do you think?" Lin asked.
"Show it to Brightness Shallan."
Inadara sounded displeased, which seemed her normal state. Shallan glanced over Lin's hastily sketched map, then nodded, turning back to her drawing. It would be better if she could see the center plateau herself, but the corner this woman had drawn gave Shallan an idea.
"Not going to say anything?" Inadara asked.
"Not done yet," Shallan said, dipping her pen in the ink.
"We have been given an order by the High Prince himself to find the Oath Gate."
"I will."
Something crashed outside like distant lightning. Pattern said.
"Bad, very bad."
Inadara looked at Pattern, who dimpled the floor near Shallan.
"I do not like this thing. Spren should not speak. It may be one of them. A void bringer." "I am not a void, Spren," Pattern said.
"Brightness Shallan?"
"He's not a void, Spren," Shallan said absently.
"We should study it," Inadara said. "How long did you say it has been following you?"
A heavy footstep sounded on the floor, Renarin stepping forward. Shallan would have preferred to keep Pattern secret, but when the winds had started picking up, he'd started buzzing loudly. There was no avoiding it now that he'd drawn the scholar's attention. Renarin leaned down. He seemed fascinated by Pattern. He wasn't the only one.
"It is likely involved," Inadara said. "You should not dismiss one of my theories so quickly. I still think it might be related to the Voidbringers."
"Know you nothing of Patterns, old human?" Pattern said, huffing.
When had he picked up how to huff?
"Voidbringers have no pattern. Besides, I have read of them in your lore. They speak of spindly arms like bone and horrific faces. I should think, if you wish to find one, the mirror might be a location where you can begin your search."
Inadara recoiled. Then she stomped away, moving to chat with Brightness Velat and the ardent Isasik about their interpretation of Shallan's map. Shallan smiled as she drew. "That was clever."
"I am trying to learn," Pattern replied. "Insults in particular will be of great use to my people, as they are truths and lies combined in a quite interesting manner."
The pops continued outside.
What is that? She asked softly, finishing another plateau.
Storm, Spren, Pattern said. They are a variety of void, Spren. It is not good. I feel something very dangerous brewing. Draw more quickly.
The Oath Gate must be in that center plateau somewhere, Inadara said to her group of scholars.
We will never search the entire thing in time, said one of the Ardents, a man who seemed to be constantly removing his spectacles and wiping them down. He put them back on.
That plateau is by far the largest we've found on the plains.
It was a problem. How to find the Oath Gate? It could be anywhere.
No, Shallan thought, drawing with precise motions. The old maps placed what Yasna thought was the Oath Gate southwest of the city center. Unfortunately, she still didn't have a scale for reference. The city was too ancient, and all the maps were copies of copies of copies or recreations from descriptions. She was certain by now that Stormseat hadn't made up the entire shattered plains. The city hadn't been nearly so huge. Structures like the war camps had been outbuildings or satellite cities. But that was just a guess. She needed something concrete, some sign. The tent flaps opened again. It had grown cold outside. Was the rain harder than it had been?
Damnation, the newcomer swore, a thin man in a scout's uniform. Have you seen what is happening out there? Why are we split across the plateaus? Wasn't the plan to fight a defensive battle?
Your report? Inadara asked.
Get me a towel and some paper, the scout said. I rounded the southern side of the central plateau. I'll draw what I saw. But damnation! They're throwing lightning, Brightness. Throwing it! It's insane. How do we fight such things?
Shallan finished the last plateau on her drawing. She settled back on her heels, lowering her pen. The shattered plains, drawn almost in their entirety. But what was she doing? What was the point?
We will make an expedition into the central plateau, Inadara said. Bright Lord Renarin, we will need your protection. Perhaps in the Parshendi city we will find the elderly or the workers, and we can protect them as Bright Lord Dalinar has instructed. They might know about the Oath Gate. If not, we can begin breaking into buildings and searching for clues.
Too slow, Shallan thought.
The newly arrived scout stepped up to Shallan's large map. He leaned over, inspecting it as he dried himself off with a towel. Shallan gave him a glare. If he dripped water on this after all she'd done,
that's wrong, he said.
Wrong? Her art? Of course it wasn't wrong. Where? She asked, exhausted.
That plateau there, the man said, pointing. It's not long and thin as you drew it. It's a perfect circle, with big gaps between it and the plateaus on its east and west.
That's unlikely, Shallan said. If it were that way, she blinked. If it were that way, it wouldn't match the pattern.
Well then, find Brightness Shallan a squad of soldiers and do as she says, Dalinar said, turning and raising his arm against the wind. Renarin nodded. Blessedly, he'd agreed to put on his plate for the battle, rather than continuing on with Bridge 4. Dalinar barely understood the lad these days. Storms. Dalinar had never known a man who could look awkward in shardplate, but his son managed it. The sheet of wind-driven rain passed. Light from blue lanterns reflected from Renarin's wet armor.
Go, Dalinar said. Protect the scholars on their mission.
I,
Renarin said.
Father, I don't know.
It wasn't a request, Renarin, Dalinar shouted. Do as you're told, or give that storming plate to someone who will.
The boy stumbled back, then saluted with a metallic slap. Dalinar pointed at Gaval, who barked orders, gathering a squad of soldiers. Renarin followed Gaval as the two of them moved off. Stormfather. The sky had grown darker and darker. They'd need Navani's Fabrials soon. That wind came in bursts, blowing rain that was entirely too strong for the weeping.
We have to interrupt that singing!
Dalinar shouted against the rain, making his way to the edge of the plateau, joined by officers and messengers, including Relaine and several members of Bridge Four.
Parshman, is this storm they're doing?
I believe so, Bright Lord Dalinar.
On the other side of the chasm, Aladar's army fought a desperate battle against the Parshendi. Red lightning came in bursts, but according to field reports, the Parshendi didn't know how to control it. It could be very dangerous to those who stood close by, but was not the terrible weapon it had first seemed. In direct combat, unfortunately, these new Parshendi were another thing entirely. A group of them prowled close to the chasm, where they ripped through a squad of spearmen like a white spine through a patch of ferns. They fought with a ferocity beyond what the Parshendi had ever shown on the plateau runs, and their weapons connected with flashes of red. It was difficult to watch, but Dalinar's place was not out there fighting. Not today.
Aladar's eastern flank needs reinforcement, Dalinar said. What do we have?
Light infantry reserves,
General Call said, wearing only his uniform. His son wore his shards, fighting with Roian's army.
15th Spear Division from Sabariel's army. But those were supposed to support Bright Lord Adolin.
He'll survive without them. Get those men over here and see Aladar reinforced. Tell him to punch through to those Parshendi in the back. Engage the ones singing at all costs. What's Navani's status?
She is ready with the devices, Bright Lord, a messenger said. She wants to know where she should begin.
Roian's flank, Dalinar said immediately.
He sensed a disaster brewing there. Speeches were all well and good, but even with Kal's son fighting on that front, Roian's troops were the worst he had. Taleb was supporting them with some of Sabariel's troops, who were surprisingly good. The man himself was practically useless in a battle, but he knew how to hire the right people, and that had always been his genius. Sabariel probably assumed that Dalinar didn't know that. He'd kept many of Sabariel's troops as a reserve up until now. With them on the field, they'd committed almost every soldier they had. Dalinar hiked back toward the command tent, passing Shallan, Inadara, some bridgemen, and a squad of soldiers, Renarin included, crossing the plateau at a trot, heading out on their mission. They'd have to skirt across the southern plateau near the fighting to get where they were going.
Kalek speed their way.
Dalinar himself pushed through the rain, soaked to the very bones, reading the battle through what he could see of the flanks. His force had the size advantage, as anticipated. But now this red lightning, this wind. The Parshendi moved through the darkness and the gusts of wind with ease, while the humans slipped, squinted, and were battered. Still, the Alethi were holding their own. The problem was that this was only half of the Parshendi. If the other half attacked, his people would be in serious trouble. But they didn't attack, so they must consider that singing to be important. They saw the wind they were creating as more damaging, more deadly to the humans than simply joining the battle. That terrified him. What was coming would be worse.
I am sorry that you have to die this way.
Dalinar stood still. Rain streamed down. He looked at the flock of messengers, aides, bodyguards, and officers who attended him.
Who spoke?
They looked at one another.
Wait.
He recognized that voice, didn't he? It was familiar to him.
Yes, he'd heard it many times. In his visions. It was the voice of the Almighty.
82. For Glory Lit. There is one you will watch. Though all of them have some relevance to precognition, Moelak is one of the most powerful in this regard. His touch seeps into a soul as it breaks apart from the body, creating manifestations powered by the spark of death itself. But no, this is a distraction, deviation, kingship. We must discuss the nature of kingship. From the diagram, Book of the Second Desk Drawer, paragraph 15. Kaladin limped up the switchbacks to the palace, his leg a knotted mass of pain. Almost falling as he reached the doors, he slumped against them, gasping, his crutch under one arm, spear in the other hand, as if he could do anything with that.
Have to get to the king.
How would he get Elokar away? Moash would be watching. Storms.
The assassination could happen any day, any hour now. Surely Dalinar was already far enough from the war camps. Keep moving.
Kaladin stumbled into the entryway. No guards at the doors. Bad sign. Should he have raised the alarm? There weren't any soldiers in camp to help, and if he'd come in force, Graves and his men would know something was wrong. Alone, Kaladin might be able to see the king. His best hope was to get Elokar to safety quietly.
Fool, Kaladin thought to himself. You change your mind now? After all of this? What are you doing?
But Stormit, the king tried. He actually tried. The man was arrogant, perhaps incapable, but he tried. He was sincere. Kaladin stopped, exhausted, legs screaming, and leaned against the wall. Shouldn't this be easier? Now that he'd made the decision, shouldn't he be focused, confident, energized? He felt none of that. He felt wrung out, confused, and uncertain. He pushed himself forward. Keep going. Almighty send that he wasn't too late. Was he back to praying now? He picked through darkened corridors. Shouldn't there be more light? With some difficulty, he reached the king's upper rooms, with the conference chamber and its balcony to the side. Two men in Bridge Four uniforms guarded the door, but Kaladin didn't recognize either of them. They weren't Bridge Four. They weren't even members of the old king's guard. Storms! Kaladin hobbled up to them, knowing he must look a sight, soaked through and through, limping on a leg that, he noticed, was trailing blood. He'd split the sutures on his wounds.
Stop, said one of the men.
The fellow had a chin so cleft it looked like he'd taken an axe to the face as a baby. He looked Kaladin up and down.
You're the one they call Stormblessed.
You're Graves's men.
The two looked at each other.
It's all right, Kaladin said. I'm with you.
Is Moash here?
He's off for the moment, the soldier said, getting some sleep. It's an important day.
I'm not too late, Kaladin thought. Luck was with him.
I want to be part of what you're doing.
It's taken care of, Bridge Man, the guard said. Go back to your barrack and pretend nothing is happening.
Kaladin leaned in close as if to whisper something. The guard leaned forward. So Kaladin dropped his crutch and slammed his spear up between the man's legs. Kaladin immediately turned, spinning on his good leg and dragging the other one, whipping his spear toward the other man. The man got his spear up to block and tried to shout.
To arms! To—
Kaladin slammed against him, knocking aside his spear. Kaladin dropped his own spear and grabbed the man by the neck with thumb, wet fingers, and cracked his head against the wall. Then he twisted and dropped, bringing his elbow down onto Cleft Chin's head, driving it down into the floor. Both men fell still. Lightheaded from the sudden exertion, Kaladin slammed himself back against the door. The world spun. At least he knew he could still fight without Stormlight. He found himself laughing, though it turned into a cough. Had he really just attacked those men? He was committed now. Storms, he didn't even really know why he was doing this. The king's sincerity was part of it, but that wasn't the true reason. Not deep down. He knew this was what he should do, but why? The thought of the king dying for no good reason made him sick. It reminded him of what had been done to Tien. But that wasn't the full reason either. Storms, he wasn't making any sense, not even to himself. Neither guard moved, save for a few twitches. Kaladin coughed and coughed, gasping for breath. No time for weakness. He reached up a claw-like hand and twisted the door handle, forcing it open. He half fell into the room, then stumbled to his feet.
"Your Majesty!"
he called, propping himself up on his spear and dragging his bad leg. He reached the back of a couch and used it to pull himself fully upright.
"Where was the—"
The king lay on the couch, unmoving. Adolin swept broadly with his blade, maintaining perfect wind stance, the sword's point spraying water as he sheared through the neck of a Parshendi soldier. Red lightning crackled from the corpse in a bright flare, connecting the soldier to the ground as he died. Nearby, Alethi were careful not to step in puddles beside the corpse. They had learned the hard way that this strange lightning could kill quickly via water. Raising his sword and charging, Adolin led a rush against the nearest Parshendi group. Curse this storm and the winds that had brought it. Fortunately, the darkness had been pushed back somewhat, as Nabani had sent Fabrials to bathe the battlefield in an extraordinarily even white light. Adolin and his team clashed again with the Parshendi. However, as soon as he got among the enemy, he felt something tug on his left arm. A loop of rope? He jerked back. No rope could hold Shardplate. He growled and yanked the rope free of the hands holding it. Then he jerked as another rope looped his neck and pulled him backward. He shouted, spinning and sweeping his blade through the rope, severing it. Three more loops leaped from the darkness for him. The Parshendi had sent an entire team. Adolin turned to defensive sweeps, as he'd been trained by Zyle to resist a dedicated rope strike. They'd have strung other ropes across the ground in front of him, expecting that he'd charge them. Yes, there they were. Adolin backed away, slicing free the ropes that reached him. Unfortunately, his men had been depending on him to break the Parshendi line. As he backed away instead, the enemy pressed against the Alethi line in force. As always, they didn't use traditional battle formations, instead attacking in squads and pairs. That was frightfully effective on this chaotic, rain-soaked battlefield, with cracks of lightning and bursts of wind. Peril, the field commander that he'd put in charge near the lights, called the retreat for Adolin's flank. Adolin let out a series of curses, cutting loose one final rope and stepping backward, sword out in case the Parshendi pursued. They didn't. Two figures, however, shadowed him as he joined the retreat.
"Still alive, Bridgman?" Adolin asked.
"Still alive," Scar said.
"You've got some loops of rope stuck to you still, sir," Drahi said.
Adolin held out his arm and let Drahi cut them free with his side knife. Over his shoulder, Adolin watched the Parshendi reform their lines. From farther back, the sound of that harsh chanting reached him between crashes of lightning and bursts of wind.
"They keep sending teams to engage and distract me," Adolin said. "They don't intend to defeat me. They just want to keep me out of the battle."
"They'll have to really fight you sooner or later,"
Drahi said, cutting off another of the ropes. Drahi reached up and ran his hand over his bald head, wiping the rain off.
"They can't just leave a shard-bearer alone."
"Actually," Adolin said, narrowing his eyes, listening to that chanting, "that's exactly what they're doing."
Through sheets of wind-borne rain, Adolin jogged in a clanking run up to the command position, near the lights. Perel, wrapped in a large storm coat, stood there bellowing orders. He gave Adolin a quick salute.
"Status?" Adolin asked.
"Treading water, Bright Lord."
"I have no idea what that means," Adolin said.
"Swimming term, sir," Peril said. "We're fighting back and forth, but we're not making any headway. We're fairly evenly matched. Each side is looking for an edge. I'm most worried about those Parshendi reserves. They should have committed those by now."
"The reserves?" Adolin asked, peering across the dim plateau.
"You mean the singers?"
To both right and left, Alethi troops engaged other Parshendi units. Men shouted and screamed, weapons clashed, the familiar deadly sounds of a battlefield.
"Yes, sir," Peril said. "They're up against that rock formation at the middle of the plateau, singing their storming hearts out."
Adolin remembered that rock outcropping looming in the dim light. It was easily large enough for a battalion on top.
"Could we climb it from behind?"
"In this rain, Bright Lord?" Peril asked. "Not likely. Maybe you could, but would you really want to go alone?"
Adolin waited for the familiar eagerness to urge him forward, the desire to rush into the fight without concern for the consequences. He'd trained himself to resist that urge, and was surprised to find it gone. Nothing. He frowned. He was tired. Was that the reason? He considered the situation, thinking to the sound of rain on his helmet.
"We need to get those Parshendi at the back," he thought. "Father wants the reserves engaged, the song broken off." What had Shallan said about these inner plateaus and the rock formations on them?
"Gather me a battalion," Adolin said. 1,000 men, heavy infantry. Once I've been gone with them for half an hour, send the rest of the men in a full assault against the Parshendi. I'm going to try something, and I want you to provide a distraction."
"You're dead,"
Dalinar shouted toward the sky. He spun about, still on the central plateau between the three battlefields, startling the aides and attendants near him.
"You told me you had been killed!"
Rain pelted his face. Were his ears playing tricks on him in this havoc of rain and shouting?
"I am not the Almighty," the voice said.
Dalinar turned, searching among his startled companions. Four bridgemen in storm coats stepped back as if frightened. His captains watched the clouds unsteadily, holding hands on swords.
"Did any of you hear that voice?"
Dalinar asked. Women and men alike shook heads.
"Are you hearing the Almighty?"
asked one of the messenger women.
"Yes."
It was the simplest answer, though he wasn't sure what was happening. He continued to cross the central plateau, intending to check on Adolin's battlefront.
"I am sorry,"
the voice repeated. Unlike in the visions, Dalinar could find no avatar speaking the words. They came out of nowhere.
"You have striven hard, but I can do nothing for you."
"Who are you?"
Dalinar hissed.
"I am the one left behind," the voice said.
It wasn't exactly as he'd heard it in the visions. This voice had a depth to it, a density.
"I am the sliver of him that remains. I saw his corpse, saw him die when Odium murdered him, and I fled. To continue as I always have, the peace of God left in this world, the winds that men must feel."
Was he responding to Dalinar's question or speaking a mere monologue? In the visions, Dalinar had originally assumed he was having conversations with this voice, only to find that its half of the seeming dialogue had been preset. He could not tell if this was the same or not. Storms. Was he in the middle of a vision now? He froze in place, suddenly imagining a horrible picture of himself, sprawled on the floor of the palace, having imagined everything leading up to this battle in the rain.
"No," he thought forcefully. "I will not travel down that path."
He had always recognized when he was in a vision before. He had no reason to believe that had changed. The reserves he'd ordered for Aladar trotted past, spearmen with points toward the sky. That would be storming dangerous if real lightning came, but they didn't have much choice. Dalinar waited for the voice to say more, but nothing happened. He proceeded, and soon approached Adolin's plateau. Was that thunder? No. Dalinar turned and picked out a horse galloping across the plateau toward him, a messenger on its back. He held up a hand, interrupting a tactical report by Captain Yave.
"Bright Lord!"
the messenger shouted. She reared the horse.
"Bright Lord Taleb has fallen! High Prince Royan has been routed! His lines are broken, his remaining men surrounded by Parshendi! He's trapped on the northern plateau!"
"Damnation!"
"Captain Kahl?" "Still up, fighting toward where Royan was last seen. He's nearly overwhelmed."
Dalinar spun to Yave.
"Reserves?"
"I don't know what we have left,"
the man said, face pale in the dim light.
"Depends on if any have rotated out."
"Find out and bring them here,"
Dalinar said, running to the messenger.
"Off,"
he told her.
"Sir?"
"Off!"
The woman scrambled from the saddle as Dalinar placed foot into stirrup and swung into position. He turned the horse, thankful for once he didn't have on any shard plate. This light horse wouldn't have been able to carry him.
"Gather whatever you can and follow,"
he shouted.
"I need men, even if you have to pull that battalion of spearmen back from Aladar."
Captain Yava's reply was lost in the rain as Dalinar leaned low and cued the horse with his heels. The animal snorted, and Dalinar had to fight it before getting it to move. The pops of lightning in the distance had the creature skittish. Once pointed the right direction, he gave the horse its head, and it galloped eagerly. Dalinar crossed the plateau in a rush, triage tents, command posts, and food stations passing in a blur. As he neared the northern plateau, he reined in the horse and scanned the area for Navani. No sign of her, though he did see several large tarps laid on the ground here, expansive squares of black cloth. She'd been at work. He called a question to an engineer and she pointed, so Dalinar rode along the chasm in that direction. He passed a succession of other tarps that had been arranged on the stone. Across the chasm to his left, men died with shouts and screams. He saw firsthand how terribly Roeon's battle was progressing. The danger was manifest in broken groups of men flying beleaguered banners, split into vulnerable small bunches by red-eyed enemies. The Alethi would fight on, but with their line fragmenting, their prospects were grim. Dalinar remembered fighting like that himself 2 months ago, surrounded by a sea of enemies without hope for salvation. Dalinar pushed his horse faster and soon spotted Navani. She stood beneath an umbrella directing a group of workers with another large tarp.
"Navani!"
Dalinar shouted, pulling his horse to a slippery stop across the tarp from her.
"I need a miracle!"
"Working on it," she shouted back.
"No time for working. Execute your plan. Now!"
He was too distant to see her glare, but he felt it. Fortunately, she waved workers away from her current tarp and began shouting orders to her engineers. The women ran up to the chasm where a line of rocks was arrayed. They were attached to ropes, Dalinar thought, though he wasn't sure how this process worked. Navani shouted instructions.
"Too much time,"
Dalinar thought, anxious, watching across the chasm. Had they recovered Taleb's shards? He couldn't spare grief for the man, not now.
They needed those shards.
Behind Dalinar, soldiers gathered. Rohian's archers, finest in the war camps, had been useless in this rain. The engineers backed up at a barked order from Navani, and the workers shoved the line of some 40 rocks into the chasm. As the rocks fell, tarps jumped 50 feet into the air, pulled at the front corners and centers. In an instant, a long line of improvised pavilions flanked the chasm.
"Move!"
Dalinar said, urging his horse between two of the pavilions.
"Archers forward!"
Men dashed into the protected areas under the tarps, some muttering at the lack of any visible poles holding them in the air. Navani had pulled up only the fronts, so the tarps slanted backward, away from the chasm. The rain streamed down in that direction. They also had sides, like tents, so only the open faces were toward Rohian's battlefront. Dalinar swung from the horse and handed the reins to a worker. He jogged under one of the pavilions to where archers were forming ranks. Navani entered, carrying a large sack over her shoulder. She opened it to reveal a large, glowing garnet suspended within a delicate wire lacework fabrielle. She fiddled with it for a moment, then stepped back.
"We really should have had more time to test this," she warned to Dalinar, folding her arms. "Attractors are new inventions. I'm still half afraid this thing will suck the blood out of anyone who touches it."
It didn't. Instead, water quickly started to pool around the thing.
Storms, it worked.
The fabrielle was pulling moisture from the air. Rohian's archers removed bowstrings from protected pockets, bending bows and stringing them at the orders of their lieutenants. Many of the men here were light-eyes. Archery was seen as an acceptable calling for a light-eyed man of modest means. Not everyone could be an officer. The archers began loosing waves of arrows across the chasm into the Parshendi who had surrounded Rohian's forces.
"Good,"
Dalinar said, watching the arrows fly.
"Very good." "The rain and wind are still going to make aiming the arrows difficult,"
Navani said.
"And I don't know how well the fabrials will work. With the front of the pavilions open, humidity is going to flood in constantly. We might run out of stormlight after just a short time."
"It's enough,"
Dalinar said. The arrows made an almost immediate difference, drawing Parshendi's attention away from the beleaguered men. It wasn't a maneuver to try unless you were desperate. The risk of hitting allies was great. But Rohian's archers proved deserving of their reputation. He pulled Navani close with one arm.
"You did well."
Then he called for his horse, his horse, not that wild messenger beast, as he charged out of the pavilion. Those archers would give him an opening. Hopefully it wasn't too late for Rohian.
"No,"
Kaladin thought, rounding the couch to the king's side. "Was he dead? There was no obvious wound." The king shifted, then groaned in a lazy way and sat upright. Kaladin let out a deep breath. An empty wine bottle rested on the end table, and Kaladin could smell the spilled wine now that he was closer.
"Bridgeman?"
Elokar's speech was slurred.
"Have you come to gloat over me?"
"Storms, Elokar," Kaladin said. "How much have you had?"
They all talk about me,"
Elokar said, flopping down on the couch.
"My own guards, everyone. Bad king, they say. Everyone hates him, they say.
Kaladin felt a chill.
They wanted you to drink Alucard. Makes their job easier.
Huh?
Storms. The man was barely conscious.
Come on, Kaladin said. Assassins are coming for you. We're getting out of here.
Assassins?
Alucard leapt to his feet, then wobbled.
He wears white. I knew he'd come. But then, he only cared about Dalinar. Not even the assassin thinks I'm worthy of the throne.
Kaladin managed to get under Elokar's arm, holding his spear for support with one hand. The king slumped against him, and Kaladin's leg cried out.
Please, your majesty, Kaladin said, almost collapsing. I need you to try to walk.
Assassins probably want you, bridgeman, the king muttered. You're more a leader than I am. I wish you'd teach me.
Thankfully, Alucard then did support himself to an extent. It was a struggle to walk the two of them to the doorway where the guard's body still lay.
Body? Where was the other one?
Kaladin twisted out of the king's grip as a blur with a knife lunged at him. By instinct, Kaladin snapped his spear haft back, bringing his hands up near the head for a close-quarters fight, then thrust. The spearhead sank in deep into Cleft Chin's stomach. The man grunted. But he hadn't been lunging for Kaladin. He'd plunged his knife into the king's side. Cleft Chin flopped to the floor, falling off Kaladin's spear and dropping his knife. Elokar reached, a stunned expression on his face, to his side. The hand came away bloody.
I'm dead,
Elokar whispered, regarding the blood. In that moment, Kaladin's pain and weakness seemed to fade. The moment of panic was a moment of strength, and he used it to rip at Elokar's clothing while kneeling on his good leg. The knife had glanced off a rib. The king was bleeding heavily, but it was a very survivable wound, with medical attention.
Keep pressure on that,
Kaladin said, pushing a cut section of the king's shirt against the wound, then placing the king's hand over it.
We need to get out of the palace. Find safety somewhere.
The dueling grounds, maybe? The Ardens could be relied upon, and they could fight, too. But would that be too obvious? Well, first they had to actually get out of the palace. Kaladin grabbed his spear and turned to lead the way out, but his leg nearly betrayed him. He managed to catch himself, but it left him gasping in pain, clinging to his spear to keep from falling.
Storms! Was that pool of blood at his feet his?
He'd ripped his sutures out and then some.
I was wrong, the king said. We're both dead.
Fleet kept running,
Kaladin growled, getting back under Elokar's arm.
What?
He couldn't win, but he kept running. And when the storm caught him, it didn't matter that he'd died, because he'd run for all he had. Sure. All right.
The king sounded groggy, though Kaladin couldn't tell if it was the alcohol or the blood loss.
We all die in the end, you see, Kaladin said.
The two of them walked down the corridor, Kaladin leaning on his spear to keep them upright.
So I guess what truly matters is just how well you've run. And Elokar, you've kept running since your father was killed, even if you screw up all the storming time.
Thank you,
the king said, drowsy. They reached an intersection, and Kaladin decided on escaping through the bowels of the palace complex rather than the front gates. It was equally fast, but might not be the first place the plotters would look. The palace was empty. Moesh had done as he'd said, sending the servants away into hiding, using the precedent of the assassin in White's attack. It was a perfect plan.
Why,
the king whispered,
shouldn't you hate me?
I don't like you, Elokar, Kaladin said, but that doesn't mean it's right to let you die.
You said I should step down. Why, bridgeman? Why help me?
I don't know.
They turned down a hallway, but only made it about halfway before the king stopped walking and slumped to the ground. Kaladin cursed, kneeling beside Elokar, checking his pulse and the wound.
This is the wine, Kaladin decided.
That plus the blood loss left the king too light-headed.
Bad.
Kaladin worked to rebind the wound as best he could, but then what? Try to pull the king out on a litter? Go for help and risk leaving him alone?
Kaladin?
Kaladin froze, still kneeling over the king.
Kaladin, what are you doing?
Moash's voice demanded from behind.
We found the men at the door to the king's room. Storms, did you kill them?
Kaladin rose and turned, putting his weight on his good leg. Moash stood at the other end of the corridor, resplendent in his blue and red shard plate. Another shard-bearer accompanied him, blade up on the shoulder of his plate, faceplate down. Graves. The assassins had arrived. 83. Time's Illusion. Obviously they are fools. The desolation needs no usher. It can and will sit where it wishes, and the signs are obvious that the Spren anticipate it doing so. The Ancient of Stones must finally begin to crack. It is a wonder that upon his will rested the prosperity and peace of a world for over 4 millennia. From the diagram, Book of the Second Sealing Rotation, Pattern 1.
Shallan stepped off the bridge onto a deserted plateau. The rain muffled the sounds of warfare, making the area feel even more isolated. Darkness like dusk, rainfall like hushed whispers. This plateau was higher than most, so she could see Stormseat's center arrayed around her. Pillars with creme accreting at their bases, transforming them to stalagmites. Buildings that had become mounds, overgrown with stone, like snow covering a fallen log. In the darkness and rain, the ancient city presented a sketch of skyline for the imagination to fill in. This city hid beneath time's own illusion. The others followed her across the bridge. They'd skirted the fighting on Aladar's battlefront, slipping along the Alethi lines to attain this farther plateau. Getting up here had taken time, as the bridgemen had needed to locate a usable landing. They'd had to climb a slope on the adjoining plateau and place their bridge there to get across the chasm.
"How can you be sure this is the right place?" Renarin asked, clinking down onto the plateau beside her.
Shallan had opted for an umbrella, but Renarin stood in the rain, helm under his arm, letting the water stream down his face. Didn't he wear spectacles? She hadn't seen them on him much lately.
"It is the right place," Shallan said, "because it's deviant."
"That's hardly a logical conclusion," Inadara said, joining the two of them as soldiers and bridgemen crossed to the empty plateau. "A portal of this nature would be kept hidden. It would not be deviant."
"The Oath Gates were not hidden," Shallan said. "That is beside the point, however. This plateau is a circle. Many are circular."
"Not this circular," Shallan said, striding forward. Now that she was here, she could see just how irregularly, well, regular, the plateau was.
"I was looking for a dais on a plateau, but didn't realize the scale of what I was searching for. This entire plateau is the dais upon which the Oath Gate sat. Don't you see? The other plateaus were created by some kind of disaster. They are jagged, broken. This place is not. That's because it was already here when the shattering happened. On the old maps, it was a raised section like a giant pedestal. When the planes were broken, it remained this way."
"Yes," Renarin said, nodding. "Imagine a plate with a circle etched into the center. If a force shattered the plate, it might break along the already weakened lines, leaving you with a bunch of irregular pieces," Shallan agreed, "and one shaped like a circle."
"Perhaps," Inadara said, "but I find it odd that something so tactically important would be exposed."
"The Oath Gates were a symbol," Shallan said, continuing to walk. "The Vorin right of travel given to all citizens of sufficient rank is based on the Herald's declaration that all borders should be open. If you were going to create a symbol of that unity, a portal that connected all of the Silver Kingdoms together, where would you put it? Hidden in a locked room? Or on a stage that rose above the city?
It was out here because they were proud of it. They continued through the blowing rain. There was a hallowed quality to this place, and honestly, that was part of how she knew she was right. Pattern said softly. They are raising a storm. The Voidspren? Shallan whispered. The bonded ones. They craft a storm. Right. Her task was urgent. She didn't have time to stand around thinking. She was about to order the search begun, but paused as she noticed Renarin staring westward, his eyes distant. Prince Renarin? She asked. The wrong way, he whispered. The wind is blowing from the wrong direction. West to east. Oh, almighty above, it's terrible. She followed his gaze but could see nothing. It's actually real, Renarin said. The Everstorm. What are you talking about? Shallan asked, feeling a chill at the tone of his voice. He looked to her and wiped the water from his eyes, gauntlet hanging from his waist. I should be with my father. I should be able to fight. Only I'm useless. Great. He was creepy and whiny. Well, your father ordered you to help me, so deal with your issues. Everyone, let's search this place.
What are we looking for, cousin? Asked Rock, one of the bridge men.
Cousin, she thought. Cute, because of the red hair. I don't know, she said. Anything strange, out of the ordinary. They split up and spread out across the plateau. Along with Inadara, Shallan had a small group of ardents and scholars to help her, including one of Dalinar's storm wardens. She sent teams of several scholars, one bridgeman and one soldier each, in different directions. Renarin and the majority of the bridgemen insisted on going with her. She couldn't complain about that. This was a war zone. Shallan passed a lump on the ground, part of a large ring, perhaps once a low, ornamental wall. How would this place have looked? She pictured it in her mind and wished she could have drawn it. That would certainly have helped her visualize. Where would the portal be? Most likely at the center, so that was the direction she went. There she found a large stone mound.
This is all? Rock asked. He is just more rock.
That is exactly what I was hoping to find, Shallan said. Anything exposed to the air would have weathered away or become immured with creme. If we're to discover anything useful, it will have to be inside.
Inside? Asked one of the bridge men.
Inside what? The buildings, Shallan said, feeling at the wall until she found a ripple in the back of the rock. She turned to Renarin. Prince Renarin, would you kindly slay this rock for me?
Adolin raised his spear in the dark chamber, shining light on the wall. After so long outdoors in the weeping, it felt strange not to have rain tapping against his helm. The musty air in this place was already growing humid, and even with the shuffling of soldiers and men coughing, Adolin felt like it was too silent. Within this rocky tomb, they may as well have been miles away from the battlefield just outside.
How did you know, sir? Asked Scar, the bridge man. How'd you guess that this rock mound would be hollow?
Because a clever woman, Adolin said, once asked me to attack a boulder for her. Together, he and these men had circled to the other side of the large rock formation that the chanting Parshendi were using to guard their backs. With a few twists of the shard blade, Adolin had cut an entrance into the mound, which had proven to be hollow as he'd hoped. He picked his way through the dusty chambers, passing bones and dried debris that might once have been furniture. Presumably it had rotted away before the creme had finished sealing the building. Had it been a kind of communal dwelling long ago? Or perhaps a market? It did have a lot of rooms. Many doorways still bore rusted hinges that had once held doors. 1,000 men moved through the building with him, holding lanterns that carried large cut gems, 5 times bigger than Brome's, though even some of those were starting to fail, as it had been so long since a high storm. 1,000 men was a large number to navigate through these eerie confines. But unless he was completely off, they should now be approaching the opposite wall, the one just behind the Parshendi. Some of his men scouted nearby rooms and came back with a confirmation. The building ended here. Adolin now saw the outlines of windows, sealed up with creme that had spilled in through gaps over the years, dribbling down the wall and piling on the floor. "All right," he called out to the company commanders and their captains. "Let's gather everyone we can in this room here, and the hall right outside. I'll cut an exit hole. As soon as it's open, we need to spill out and attack those singing Parshendi. First company, you split to either side and secure this exit. Don't get pushed back. I'll charge and try to draw attention. Everyone else move through and join the assault as quickly as you can manage." The men nodded. Adolin took a deep breath, then closed his faceplate and stepped up to the wall. They were on the second floor of the building, but he estimated the buildup of creme outside would place that at about ground level. Indeed, from outside he heard a faint sound, humming, resonating through the wall. Storms, the Parshendi were right there. He summoned his blade, waited until the company commanders passed the word back that their men were ready, then hacked at the wall in several long ribbons. He sliced it the other way with sweeping blows, then slammed his plate shoulder into it. The wall broke down and fell out, stone blocks cascading away from him. The rain returned in force. He was only a few feet off the ground, and he eagerly pushed his way out onto the slick, wet rocks. Just to his left, Parshendi reserves stood in rows facing away from him, absorbed in their chanting. The clamor of battle was nearly inaudible here, all but drowned out by the spine-tingling sound of that inhuman singing. Perfect. The rain and chanting had covered the noise of the hole opening. He hacked open another hole as men spilled out from the first one, bearing lights. He began to open a third exit, but heard a shout. One of the Parshendi had finally noticed him. She was female. With this new form of theirs, that was more obvious than it had been before. He charged the short distance to the Parshendi and launched himself into their ranks, sweeping lethally with his blade. Bodies fell dead with burned eyes. 5, then 10. His soldiers joined him, thrusting spears into the Parshendi, cutting off their awful song. It was shockingly easy. These Parshendi abandoned their song reluctantly, coming out of their trance disoriented and confused. Those who fought did so without coordination, and Adolin's swift attack didn't allow time for them to summon their strange, sparking energy. It was like killing sleeping men. Adolin had done dirty work with his shards before. Damnation any time you took the field with plate and blade against ordinary men you did dirty work, slaughtering those who might as well have been children with sticks. This was worse, though. Often they'd come to just before he killed them, blinking to consciousness, shaking themselves awake, only to find themselves face to face with a full shard-bearer in the rain, murdering their friends. Those looks of horror haunted Adolin as he sent corpse after corpse to the ground. Where was the thrill that usually propelled him through this kind of butchery? He needed it. Instead, he felt only nausea. Standing amid a field of the newly dead, the acrid smoke of burned-out eyes curling up through the rain, he trembled and dropped his blade in disgust. It vanished to mist. Something crashed into him from behind. He lurched over a corpse, stumbling but keeping his feet, and spun about. A shard blade smashed against his chest, spreading a glowing web of cracks across his breastplate. He deflected the next blow with his forearm and stepped back, taking a battle stance. She stood before him, rain streaming from her armor. What had she named herself? Eshonai. Inside his helm, Adolin grinned at the shard-bearer. This he could do. An honest fight. He raised his hands, the shard blade forming from mist as he swung upward and deflected her attack in a sweeping parry. Thank you, he thought. Dalinar rode gallant back across the bridge from Roeon's plateau, nursing a bloody wound at his side. Stupid. He should have seen that spear. He'd been too focused on that red lightning and the quick-shifting Parshendi fighting pairs. The truth, Dalinar thought, sliding from his horse so a surgeon could inspect the wound, is that you're an old man now,
perhaps not by the measuring of lifespans, as he was only in his 50s, but by the yardstick of soldiers, he was certainly old. Without Shardplate to assist, he was getting slow, getting weak. Killing was a young man's game, if only because the old men fell first. That cursed rain kept coming, so he escaped it under one of Navani's pavilions. The archers kept the Parshendi from following across the chasm to harry Roian's beleaguered retreat. With the help of the bowmen, Dalinar had successfully saved the High Prince's army, half of it at least, but they'd lost the entire northern plateau. Roian rode across to safety, followed by an exhausted Captain Call on foot. General Call's son wore his own plate and bore Taleb's blade, which he'd blessedly recovered from the corpse after the other man had fallen. They'd been forced to leave the body and the plate. Just as bad, the Parshendi singing continued unabated. Despite the soldiers saved, this was a terrible defeat. Dalinar undid his breastplate and sat down with a grunt as the surgeon ordered him a stool. He suffered the woman's ministration, though he knew the wound was not terrible. It was bad, any wound was bad on the battlefield, particularly if it impaired the sword arm, but it wouldn't kill him.
"Storms," the surgeon said. "High Prince, you're all scars under here. How many times have you been wounded in the shoulder?"
"Can't remember."
"How can you still use your arm?"
"Training and practice."
"That's not how it works," she whispered, eyes wide. "I mean, storms."
"Just sew the thing up," he said. "Yes, I'll stay off the battlefield today. No, I won't stress it. Yes, I've heard all the lectures before."
He shouldn't have been out there in the first place. He'd told himself he wouldn't ride into battle anymore. He was supposed to be a politician now, not a warlord. But once in a while, the Blackthorn needed to come out. The men needed it. Storms, he needed it. The... Navani thundered into the tent.
"Too late."
He sighed as she stalked up to him, passing this tent's fabrial, which glowed on a little pedestal, collecting water around it in a shimmering globe. That water streamed off along two metal rods at the sides of the fabrial, spilling onto the ground, then running out of the tent and over the plateau's edge. He looked up at Navani grimly, expecting to be dressed down like a recruit who had forgotten his whetstone. Instead, she took him by his good side, then pulled him close.
"No reprimand?" Dalinar asked.
"We're at war," she whispered. "And we're losing, aren't we?"
Dalinar glanced at the archers, who were running low on arrows. He didn't speak too loudly, lest they hear.
"Yes."
The surgeon glanced at him, then lowered her head and kept sewing.
"You rode to battle when someone needed you," Navani said. "You saved the lives of a high prince and his soldiers. Why would you expect anger from me?"
"Because you're you."
He reached up with his good hand and ran his fingers through her hair.
"Adolin has won his plateau," Navani said. "The Parshendi there are scattered and routed. Aladar holds. Roian has failed, but we're still evenly matched. So how are we losing? I can sense that we are from your face, but I don't see it."
"An even match is a loss for us," Dalinar said. He could feel it building, distant, to the west. "If they complete that song, then, as Relaine warned, that is the end."
The surgeon finished as best she could, wrapping the wound and giving Dalinar leave to replace his shirt and coat, which would hold the bandage tight. Once dressed, he climbed to his feet, intending to go to the command tent and get an update on the situation from General Call. He was interrupted as Roian burst into the pavilion.
"Dalinar!"
The tall, balding man rushed in, grabbing him by the arm. The bad one. Dalinar winced.
"It's a storming bloodbath out there. We're dead. Storms, we're dead."
Nearby, archers shuffled, their arrows spent. A sea of red eyes gathered on the plateau across the chasm, smoldering coals in the darkness. For all that Dalinar wanted to slap Roian, that wasn't the sort of thing you did to a high prince, even a hysterical one. Instead, he towed Roian out of the pavilion. The rain, now a full-blown storm, felt icy as it washed over his soaked uniform.
"Control yourself, Bright Lord,"
Dalinar said sternly.
Adolin has won his plateau. Not all is as bad as it seems.
It should not end this way, the Almighty said.
Storm it.
Dalinar shoved Royan away and strode out into the center of the plateau, looking up toward the sky.
Answer me! Let me know if you can hear me!
I can.
Finally, some progress.
Are you the Almighty?
I said I am not, Child of Honor.
Then what are you?
I am that that brings light and darkness.
The voice took on more of a rumbling, distant quality.
The Stormfather,
Dalinar said.
Are you a herald?
No.
Then are you a Spren or a god?
Both.
What is the point of talking to me?
Dalinar shouted at the sky.
What is happening?
They call for a storm. My opposite. Deadly.
How do we stop it?
You don't.
There has to be a way.
I bring you a storm of cleansing. It will carry away your corpses. This is all I can do.
No! Don't you dare abandon us!
You make demands of me, your god?
You aren't my god. You were never my god. You are a shadow. A lie.
Distant thunder rumbled ominously. The rain beat harder against Dalinar's face.
I am called. I must go. A daughter disobeys. You will see no further visions, Child of Honor. This is the end. Farewell.
Stormfather,
Dalinar yelled.
There has to be a way. I will not die here.
Silence. Not even thunder. People had gathered around Dalinar. Soldiers, scribes, messengers, Royan and Navani. Frightened people.
Don't abandon us,
Dalinar said, voice trailing off.
Please.
Moash stepped forward, his